Saram, dear listeners, and welcome once again to Vahini Satsang. So in the last few episodes, we are in chapter 5 of Sandeha Nivarini, a very beautiful poem, deep in meaning and beautiful in its message. Bhagwan wanted us to contemplate upon, as the bhakta, when the devotee asked, "Lord, can you tell me about the concept of who am I?" Bhagwan said, "I will tell you, but first read this poem. And as you read, think about it deeply. Read slowly, assimilate every word of what is conveyed." And by Bhagwan's grace, that is what we've been trying to do in the last few episodes of Vahini Satsang. Since we started discussing this poem, we have spent many weeks going slowly over every stanza of this poem. And today, we are in the last segment, the last five stanzas and the parting message of Bhagwan. So let us listen to this segment as Bhagwan has written and the translation in English. And then Bhagwan has sent to the studios today Brother Abhimanyu Kaul, who has joined us last 2-3 sessions, Brother Srinivas Rao and Brother Bhargav. We'll pray to Swami and see what and how he guides us today.
Bound by action, you go through the rigmarole of birth and die umpteen times. As a tree, an anthill, an ant, a mosquito, or a parrot, or even a python. But you are unable to seek the shore. O man of anxiety, it is rare to get the human birth. Do not waste even half a minute. Go find the path and proceed along to reach the Lord and be in perennial bliss. Thanks to your good fortune, the Lord of Lords has come as Sai Krishna. Think of Satya Sai in your heart blissfully and effortlessly know yourself. A million sweet words will not satiate the stomach. The play will end only when you realize the light within. O Jiva, stop listening to your useless tales and be free from ignorance. Witness the fulfilling story of Satya Sai. Thus attain the supreme wisdom.
Ah, I have understood. I have clearly understood that I am not the body, the buddhi, the manas, or the chittam. When I am not any of these, I must be only the Atma. And if I am the Atma, then I am the Paramatma, and so everything is Paramatma. Believing out of ignorance that I am this body and this intellect, this Deha and this Buddhi, we are experiencing all these miseries. True, true. We are passing through all that you said now, one after the other, as beads in a string. Oh, what a truth, what a truth. Listening to this one song is enough. The head, as you said, turns into Vairagya. Swami, I felt very disappointed when you said first that you had no time to spare. But that was due to my total ignorance. Even though I know that our Swami will never disappoint anyone or cause trouble, I thought in that manner. But you have conferred even more ananda on me now than what I thought. How can one describe your kindness? They sing of you. For a single drop of tear, Sai will melt. And they say you can never bear to see us suffer. This is the proof for that truth. Shall I take leave?
Very good. Go and come again. I too have no time to spare. I have to see off many who are returning to their places.
So that is how segment 5 ends, 5.7, the beautiful poem. Well, Bhagwan starts off by talking about the rigmarole of birth and death as a tree, an anthill, an ant, mosquito, parrot, python, unable to seek the shore. Brother Srinivas Rao, actually, when I was reading this, I don't know why, suddenly the thought came about the hospital. Because Swami is telling it is rare to get the human birth. And you know, whenever you visit the hospital, and when you see the patients, and you look at what they are going through in life, so many of them, that point in time, you really feel grateful to the Lord for what He has gifted you with.
The opportunity to...
Just opportunity to be healthy.
Yes.
Just the opportunity to be in a state where your body is cooperating, that you can think of Him. Opportunity to be able to think that, let me do something for someone else. The opportunity that is beautifully engraved as you enter the hospital.
Paropakarartham idam shariram.
Paropakarartham idam shariram. The whole idea of the body, the human birth, is that it is meant for others. In fact, other day, I was reminded of this book that I had read many years ago about reincarnations, the reincarnation theory, many lives, many mansions. You have Edgar Cayce and so many people, philosophers and seers who had written that kind of books. And one message that was conveyed emphatically is, as you take birth after birth, it will continue till you learn that you are here not for yourself. I mean, that is the lesson, because, you know, that book had a lot of stories of past life regressions done, and, you know, why he's suffering this particular problem now and all that. So I was trying to collect the essence of everything, of whatever. So two, three things that I gathered. One was, if you have a weakness, if you don't take steps to overcome that weakness, the next birth, you will have to deal with that weakness plus one more added to it. But if you utilize the chance to get over that weakness, then you go higher. Next time it will be less. And our life is nothing but situations constantly being orchestrated by the universe to see, have you overcome that?
And if we try to escape from this,
it will keep coming.
It will keep coming in different situations.
It will keep coming in different situations.
Yes.
And if you run away from it, it will definitely chase you.
Yes.
And if you want to escape it, evade it, next time it will come with interest along with its child and along with its companions. So that is how life is what, you know, all these masters, past life regression theories convey.
And it comes back with
but
greater,
the most important thing is, until you have learned that you are here not for yourself, you will have to keep coming.
One Swami said that, actually, it was in the interview room, that you live for others, your life is taken care. The universe takes care of your life automatically once you live for others. You don't live for yourself. As you said, it proves that point there.
Yes. I mean, the preciousness of human birth is something that Bhagwan always used to talk about. And as a student, I used to always think, you know, what is so special here? Why Swami keeps telling that, you know, you are so special, you have got a human birth. But I would feel, what is special? Everybody is a human being around me, you know. What is the big thing that Swami, you know, what is the really great deal about it for me to really feel proud, to, you know, to really congratulate myself, or, you know, to think of it as a great boon and achievement. Everybody, I used to think, hey, beggar also human birth, rich man also human birth, everybody is human birth. So what is the big deal about human birth?
Yeah, but
as a child, I used to think like that.
But if you see the Vedas and Upanishads, they give a small glimpse of what actually it is. Mm. Because you said we have human birth, we should live for others, and we get so many situations, we get so many different types of challenges. Mm. So we, all these things I feel are telling us to go in a direction which will take us to that bliss. Because Swami is talking about if you come near me, if you merge in me, or if you become one with me, you get bliss.
Yes.
So one small glimpse of what that bliss is, I remember, because we chant this Brahmanandavali. We chant every Saturday. It has a very beautiful, the ending of it has a very beautiful verse, a small collection of some 10-20 lines. It says, same thing, it clicked me when you told about health. Mm. So it says that if there is a man who is in his prime youth, fully healthy, there is no ailment at all to him, and he is the sovereign of the whole earth, mm-hmm. the whole bhumi. He has every type of wealth which is there on this earth at his disposal. If you consider that as one unit of ananda, mm-hmm. it calls it manushananda.
Mm-hmm.
If you call that as manushananda,
mm-hmm.
then he says you put just put 20 zeros after that. One, followed by 20 zeros.
Mm.
That is what is Brahmananda. Might be a small glimpse of what actually Swami is, if you want to see.
Mm.
So when Swami says, don't get into this rigmarole and actually aspire for that, can you imagine a person who is in prime youth, he is all healthy, he has got everything in this world, not India, not US, whole earth, mm. whatever wealth you have, is at your disposal. That is just one unit of ananda.
Mm-hmm.
And like that, I can say 10 to the power 20.
Mm-hmm.
20 zeros, it beautifully it explains 100 units of this becomes this, this becomes
mm-hmm.
this.
Mm-hmm.
Finally, Manushananda, Devananda, then you have Karma Devananda, Pitru Devananda, then you say Brahaspati Ananda, Prajapati Ananda, all that,
mm-hmm.
Indrasya Ananda.
Mm-hmm.
Finally, it says it culminates in Brahmananda.
Brahmananda,
which is nothing but when you actually start. I was actually when we chant one day, I was actually sitting and I was trying to calculate mathematically.
Mm.
Oh my God, it is like one followed by 20 zeros. Can you imagine what it is? That much of ananda is a unit of God's ananda.
Wow.
And in the same Brahmananda Valley, one more place is talks about the different sheets of existence of a human being.
Manomaya kosha.
First you say annamaya kosha, pranamaya kosha, manomaya kosha, vijnanamaya kosha, anandamaya kosha. So generally Swami says all of you are always in annamaya kosha. How much food, how is the hostel food, what you eat and all that. In that one place it comes where it talks about if you say anandamaya kosha or vijnanamaya kosha as a human being, what are its components? So the beautiful, it says the head of that purusha of ananda, if you say a man of bliss, his head is nothing but joy. Priyameva shiraha.
Mm-hmm.
Modo dakshinah pakshaha. Modaha means, actually, it's so beautiful. When we think about it, it's only Swami. Modaha means play. It's just like a small, like how leela we say, Swami does leela. It's delight. Get the delight in whatever you do. Modo dakshinah paksha, his right side is modaha. Pramodaha uttarah paksha. Pramodaha means greater delight. Mm. Not even just delight. Mm. Greater delight is his left side of that body.
Mm.
Ananda atma. The basis is bliss.
Mm.
And everything of this lives on that Brahman. That is the final. So if you actually see, like, why we should do all these things is aspire for that which is like unthinkable. And in the same Brahmananda is very special. One rule basically, Swami always quotes, Yato vacho nivartante prapya manasatha. I'm telling you all these things just for you to give a glimpse of it. Otherwise you cannot even comprehend what it is. You experience it, then enjoy it. So, and then just one step before that, I'm talking about Anandamaya Kosha. Just one step before that comes Vijnanamaya Kosha, which all over, intellectually we are all doing all this. So intellectually what it is. So in that, he says, Shraddhaiva Shiraha. As I told before, it is joy is, if you get the bliss, joy is your head of that Purusha, which is Anandamaya. Before, just before that is Vijnanamaya. Vijnanamaya means intellectually, oh, what is this? We are trying to brainstorm, we are trying to do the satsang, we are trying to do parayanam and trying to understand what actually is that bliss before experiencing, before tasting it. He says, Shraddhaiva Shiraha means only Shraddha, faith and real earnestness if we have, that is a real requirement or prerequisite to actually go from Vijnanamaya Kosha to Anandamaya Kosha. So that is what people need. He says that is the main thing which is a prerequisite to reach the Anandamaya Kosha.
Shraddha doesn't have a right English.
Yeah, it doesn't. Because Shraddha is something which is...
It has to be a mixture of couple of words. You know, like surrender, dedication, faith.
Perseverance, patience.
All mixed together with is Shraddha.
And then
dedication, sacrifice.
Dedication and perseverance come close to that.
Yeah, sure. Dedication,
that's right. You have
perseverance, all that has to be, then it becomes Shraddha.
So, and in the same way, first you say Shraddhaiva Shiraha, then Rutam and Satyam. You should be always contemplating on the truth, on that God, on that, on what Swami is, what bliss is, what this is. Then, after some time, God's grace will descend and you'll come out of this Vijnanamaya Kosha and become that Ananda which is nothing but Swami. So, there's a glimpse of that. So, what I was trying to tell is, bound by action in this, it's a very, very mysterious thing called as action.
Hmm.
Action, I remember once in our MBA class we had a discussion with Bhagya sir, one of our professors. So, one boy asked him, sir, what is actually the real action? What actually you should call as an action, which is an action which will take you to God, something which is very special. Because I don't remember Swami always. Whenever I do something, I don't remember Swami always. If I'm doing some homework now, if I'm doing an assignment, if I'm listening to you, I can't think of Swami. What action is which will take me out of this rigmarole of birth and death? So like he told, like once he had asked same thing, he had a query and he asked Swami. He replied, I remember those words which he told. He had said that, see, if you are doing a work, whatever work you are doing, it's not necessarily, if you are doing an assignment, if you are studying something, if you concentrate yourself fully on what you are doing, at the exclusion of everything else which you have, that is actually a perfect action. You don't need to say that, oh man, when I'm reading this, I should remember Swami's name. Not necessary. When you do an action, at that point, in that moment, if you do completely that action only, then that becomes perfect action which is offered to God. Means
we used to say that, what is meditation? Walking, talking, reading, writing, everything is meditation. Meditation is not just sitting separately and meant only to do a dhyanam. So,
and the crux of what he said, I really remember, he said, action is a perfect action when you don't realize that you have done the action. That is like when I say that,
you become one with action.
One with the action. Mm. And then after that, you forget that you've done it.
Mm.
Actually, you forget that you've actually done it.
You do not exist.
And just to add to this, yesterday's, there was a discourse played in Mandir, in Vidwan Mahasava. It was a discourse of 89, I think. My brother might be remembering it. So Swami says, how to start? Like, Swami was telling about this action. He was talking about Yama. In Yama, he talks about one place called Aparigrahana. Means,
yes,
or should not covet. Covet means it's not that you should not take someone's item or someone's material or something.
Non-stealing.
That is aparigraha.
Asteya.
This aparigraha means not coveting anyone else's property or position or something. So Swami takes it to the highest level. He says, and I felt that is the might be the starting of the action which you are talking about. Swami says, if you do something good for someone, don't expect anything in return from him.
Mm.
That is the first step. Leave aside, I have done something, I want results of that. If I do something for you, I shouldn't expect, I have done something for him, I should get something back from him. If you at least start following that and don't ask for something in return,
then probably you will forget.
Probably
you will
start taking that step. I felt it was like a good stepping stone, maybe a starting point for us to do that action where it takes us directly to that Anandamaya Kosha.
Hmm.
I will add another flavor to the discussion.
Sure.
Recently, we were talking to somebody, and discussion went on, like, you know, our karma, same concept of this. How do we get, you know, so much, they say, you know, we have sanchit karmas and all that. Mm-hmm. So how they force us to do certain things. And then you have a cause and effect theory. So he mentioned about scientific research and correlated with Swami's statements, how Swami has, you know, substantiated it. They talk about DNA. He has studied from the study of DNA, that how everything is a DNA. And even scientists cannot even claim where this DNA started from. Mm-hmm. It started from the Big Bang or before Big Bang. Mm-hmm. But nobody seems to understand how it is, but everything is that. Mm-hmm. And if you go further deep into it, it is basically energy. That's what they have, like, understood in that manner, that even DNA turns into an energy basis. So where does this DNA come from, which makes you, me, the table, the chair, everything? Mm. So they say that our life on this planet, it seems, or this creation, you can say, is roughly around 20 million years old. Mm. So when it started the whole drama, mm-hmm. So you can say around 1,000 or 1,500 or 2,000 lakh years mm. before it started off. So Swami has explained that DNA is when that energy, the consciousness, has started moving from every aspect of creation. Mm. So which means, as we're talking about, from the stone to amoeba to insect to parrot, rat, snake, dog, donkey, all that, mm. it has come through that.
Okay.
Mm. And only in the last 30,000 years, mm-hmm. 25 to 30,000 years,
human being.
When human started walking on this planet. So humans also have the same genes coming from there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So the trouble is, what we are experiencing, mm-hmm. and he has explained, like, you know, if somebody has a tendency mm. of too much of slothiness, mm. that could be that he has DNA been long in that kind of a being, animals, mm. who has a slothiness as a nature.
Correct. Sloth beer.
So, yeah. So that's how you have to understand, he said, that's how you understand why certain people behave the way they behave. Mm. It's because they have the DNA mm-hmm. of those animals and right. insects or whatever, yes. and that they cannot help it.
Mm-hmm.
But then he said, Swami, then we are trapped. Because that is what, like, a million years back, somebody had a problem, and now I'm suffering because of that, you know, because I have a DNA from that.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a hope he gave. He said the whole process of collection of DNA, if you put it 100%, the 15% of this DNA mm-hmm. comes from your million years of exercise.
Mm-hmm.
So that means we have 15% of that previous DNA running in us,
mm-hmm.
which includes all the animals, plants, mm-hmm. insects, wherever we have hung out.
Mm-hmm.
So that impression, and that impression dominates even today.
Correct.
The bad news is you cannot do anything to 15%.
mm-hmm.
But the good news is the 85% mm-hmm. DNA mm-hmm. is the divine DNA.
Just one. Mm.
Mm. There is a lot of DNA.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, this is the gift of human body.
Mm.
That human body has 15% DNA of the old, mm. which you cannot change.
Mm.
But you can suppress it, or you can dilute it
mm.
by concentrating on the 85% DNA, which is divine.
Mm-hmm.
And Swami said, the bad news in that is, mm. that the maximum the human beings are utilizing that out of 85, can you make a guess?
Only 1%.
He said 3 to 4%. You were too bad. Point. He said 3 to 4% people are utilizing.
Mm. I would like to add to this that the DNA starting from the beginning till the stage you reach as human stage, that is a natural progression. It is not in your hands.
It will not in your hands.
But once you come into the human
stage,
for you to evolve further, it's up to you.
Yes.
You have to work it out. That 80% is there.
That 85% is that. Yes. So yes. Swami said, this is the 85% wherein you are supposed to focus. Actually, so don't worry about your negativity.
Yeah.
Because that negativity DNA is given to you.
Yeah.
So somebody asked Swami, why? He said, that is my play. So that is the play I have introduced. But I have given you 85% to focus on. So imagine if we all are working at 3-4% out of 85, even if we make 3-4 to like 5-7 or 10%, we will be like superhumans.
Yeah. One very good devotee of Swami is a realized person, and he explained to me this exact situation we are in right now. We're talking about the life we are leading and where we have to reach. He drew a circle and put a center point to that. Center point is our goal. But we are in somewhere in this circle.
Periphery.
In the periphery or anywhere, going round and round and round in concentric circles by adding these karmas and bound by action, going through various lifetimes. So when you come to Swami, you are now, his eyes fall on you. That is where Swami has given us the hope also. Be happy. There is the good news. I am here. So he says, when you go to Swami, he knows where you are stationed at that point when you have seen him, when he has seen you. And he draws a straight line to that center point where you have to reach. That is the advantage you have.
Beautiful. So instead of going around circles, you can go straight in.
And Swami has assured that once you have come to me, I will not leave you even if you leave me. So that is the assurance. And go now, play around.
I think that is a huge benefit, right?
Yes.
So, Modo, Dakshina, Pashaha, Pramoda. Both Pramoda, yes, Moda, and...
Everything. Like Swami used to, you know, wait for us to... When he used to give us the opportunity to ask, what do you want? He was waiting to hear from you, even if mechanically, without understanding what you mean. Even if you had said, Swami, we want you, and he immediately feels satisfied. Yes, you have asked for the highest. And he wants us to ask. I also said once, you know, once I was during the evening bhajan times, I used to sit outside sometime, because if he sees you, he will talk something. So that's more welcome than just sitting in the bhajan from far off. So he used to talk to me. I used to get tempted to talk to him. And then one day I thought, okay, today if he comes and talks to me, what should I ask? I decided what to ask. So he came, and as usual, he called me front, and then I just said, blurted out, said, Swami, keep me always with you. And then he said, Naki inkem pani leda.
I have no other work.
But he was very happy I asked. And I am today very happy I asked him. It is he who made me ask, and that is why probably I am here, otherwise I couldn't have been here. It is he who kept me here.
I'll tell you a joke about the same thing. It happened to be one day, I was in the room with Swami, and you know, I don't know, the same, maybe same curiosity of all the students to say Swami that. Swami said, hey Mira, what do you want? He just was trying to ask, like, what the hell you want, the kind of, you know, expression was that. I said, Swami, I want you. Swami got up from the chair and said, take. He said, take.
I'm ready.
So I was like, what should I do now? Should I grab him and run? Then for a second I thought that I can't take him to hostel. So where did I do? And I was thinking about this confused mind, and Swami just patted me and said, Monk pichi vada. And he just walked out. It was a very funny situation with Bhagavan, yeah.
Well, if only we can take.
Take him.
And I think that is what we are doing now. We are trying to take
him.
Him into our lives. And I think that is a journey of every devotee. In fact, when you were talking about this DNA, something occurred to me, which probably we had discussed before also. Sometime back, I was doing this research on the power of a mantras. Now, Dasara is going on, and I was trying to understand how the mantras affect us. And I chanced upon this article wherein they were talking about how the mantras communicate with our bodies. And they said that until few years ago, the DNA, as the Americans knew, they declared that close to 90 or 99, maybe 90 odd percentage of the DNA is junk DNA. If you remember any article, sometime back, about 5-10 years ago, this is what the people in the US scientists concluded, that basically a large part of the DNA is junk DNA. Basically, they are not there is nothing there. It's all empty space.
So known to be non-useful.
Yeah, known to be non-useful. So they said, I remember even as a student hearing this word junk DNA, because they felt that everything is empty there. So there is nothing. I mean, DNAs are the building blocks. But all the building blocks are there as a very small percentage of the DNA. It could be that 80, that 10% or, you know, much, much less than that. So a large part of it is just nothing. It's nothing there. Okay, so they said the DNA is all junk DNA. So, and the scientists in the US had sort of reconciled to it. But Russians felt that there should be something more to it. And if you look at the Russian heritage and culture, it has a lot of connections to Vedic tradition, the ancient Russian tradition. In fact, the Russian language also is so similar to Sanskrit. It has its roots in Sanskrit. So many words have Sanskrit roots. So, and that's why you would find a lot of Russians taking very easily to these yagnams and mantra chanting and all that, especially those who are connected to the roots of Russian culture. So, the Russian scientists said that it cannot be, there must be something. And they started collaborating with people who were adept in chanting, because they felt sound has a very big role to play. Because ultimately everything is energy. Energy is nothing but frequency, and that is nothing but vibration. And when it comes to vibration, you have to experiment with sound. And when they did these experiments, that is when they found that the rest of the DNA communicates to vibrations of sound if you can vibrate at that frequency.
Okay.
And the mantras given by our sages have that kind of intonations. These mantras create those kind of vibrations by which they are able to talk to the DNA. And that is how they concluded that it is because our ancient sages and seers were able to speak to that DNA, they were able to communicate with that DNA, that they could do miracles. Because those are the building blocks. If you can communicate with that DNA, you can make fantastic changes. And ours is a 2-strand DNA. The sages and seers, they had 12-strand DNA. And that is how, sitting in the same location in a forest, in a hut, they were able to read what is happening in the cosmos. You know, without spending billions of dollars as it is spent now to find out the what is there in Mars, what is happening in Jupiter, or what is happening in Venus, you have today the kind of investment that goes into this. With absolutely zero investment, our sages and seers, they could just sit and they could visualize the cosmos. And that is how you have all astronomy, astrology, even till today, we have not yet gone to that level where we can decipher everything that the ancients have given us with, and they have done it without spending a dollar. They have done it only by able to communicate to the DNA, and that, and what the Russians concluded is this 85% or 90% what you think is junk DNA is actually that part of the DNA which is constantly interacting with the environment. And that is what leads to our evolution. See, if we have evolved as a species, if we have evolved, It is because of what is happening in the so-called junk DNA. You think there is nothing happening, but everything is happening there for you to evolve.
Mm. Okay.
And you can change that.
Mm.
If you can communicate, and for you to communicate, you should know the right frequency. So that is why, even if you do not understand the meaning of the mantras, if you chant it with the right intonation,
okay,
there is every possibility that it will do so much good to the vibrations in your being that it will lead to your evolution. It will definitely, haven't we experienced that? So if you just sit and listen to the chants, that vibration itself is something else, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You don't get those kind of low desires. You don't get that kind of feelings or thoughts that you will get, you know, in a marketplace or any other thing, you know. If you just sit there, those vibrations are something which definitely uplift you.
Mm.
You know, definitely you are at an elevated state.
You can feel that in the mornings today, nowadays.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
The pundits.
I will add you one more thing, you know. There is another research, the same topic. There are around 60 million molecules in our body. Our body is made up of around 60 million molecules, they say. And every minute or so, 300,000 molecules change.
Hmm.
Like they die, yeah, they are reborn, kind of, that is going on. And then, as you are saying about the chanting, they have found out that when we do these chants, Vedic chants, almost the same, around 300 to 500 DNA molecules gets revived.
Mm-hmm.
They are saved, or they are, you know, become purer.
Mm-hmm.
So you can imagine the target is 16 million.
Mm-hmm.
And by these chants, we are able to do 300 or 400,000,
mm-hmm,
in a day. So imagine if we are surrounded with these sounds and we consciously do that,
mm-hmm,
how many days or how much
more
effort is required to clean up the whole DNA.
Okay.
And this is what they say, that so when we so-called die and the move, this DNA goes forward with us.
Mm.
So basically, if we have cleaned up, say, a million DNAs, so at least we have lesser DNA to clean up next time. So it is like that, we keep moving. So even a chant, as you're rightly saying, you know, even a chant unconsciously done is doing something fantastic in our cells. So our DNAs, our molecules is changing. So it is a matter of time then, that how we evolve ourselves. And hopefully, so imagine if right now at 3% and 4% of 85% utilization, we are having these brains to talk about these things. Imagine if we purify ourselves and go to 10% of 85. I think we'll be in the Mars without.
But all these is possible.
Yeah.
Because we have a human birth.
Yes.
Mm. I think that is what Swami is telling, you know. It is rare to get the human birth, so don't waste even half a minute. Go find the path and proceed along to reach the Lord and be in perennial bliss.
Just, I was wondering, as brother, both of you were telling, even our seers and sages, when they gave us these many these aspects and facets of our Sanatana Dharma, one of them which always I was used to wonder is this Dashavatars, the 10 avatars. So like how we have told here that how the creation progressed.
Yes.
So actually if you see,
yes,
the Matsya Avatara, like you say, the scientists now say that the first creation, the first living being was born in the ocean. Water, in the oceans.
Ocean, yes.
So first came Matsya Avatara.
Yes.
Then they say next 20 amphibians.
Amphibians
is Kurma, a tortoise.
Yes.
Then you say Matsya Kurma Varaha. Then comes the animal.
Yes.
And then comes the animal man,
yes,
Narsimha.
Yes.
And then comes the dwarf, that is the Vamana.
Yes.
So even our sages and seers who had given us these avatars, these incarnations of God, it also suggests in a way that there has been an evolution. It is not that now the Charles Darwin or someone has come and told us and we know it. No, it's already, if we just go a little deeper into our Sanatana Dharmas, our whatever scriptures we say, it's very clearly indicated there that how the life has progressed from in water two, and then he says, finally, after that, you get this Vamana Avatara, after that, you get Parshurama. Yes. And they say, Rama is the perfect human being.
Perfect.
So it, that also, if you actually see, it actually progresses from being a being in the water,
yes,
to an amphibian, to a animal, to a half animal man, might be, I don't know.
Yes.
And then a dwarf, because we see a Neanderthal man and all, Homo sapiens are supposed to be, the earlier Homo sapiens are supposed to be very small, dwarf in their heights. Mm. And then comes Parshurama, who is to dwell in the forest. And then comes Rama, who is the perfect human being.
Mm.
And then after that, his kalas increase, and then you go to Krishna, and then finally you come to Swami.
I think that, that's a very interesting perspective. I think everything that is there in our scriptures
has
definitely multiple meanings. And you mentioned about Krishna, and Swami is telling, thanks to your good fortune, the Lord of Lords has come as Sai Krishna. Think of Satya Sai in your heart blissfully and effortlessly know yourself. In fact, I was talking to Mr. Unni, who has been serving in our accommodation office for very long. And he had this question one day. He read about the way different people leave their bodies. And he found out that as you leave your body, depending on where is your evolution in terms of the Kundalini raising, if you're at a very basic level, then, apparently you will go to this loka, this world, and then you come back. But if your Kundalini is slightly raised, you're a little more evolved, then you will go to a higher plane. And so similarly, so you go to Gandharva Loka, you go to different Satya Loka, I don't know. There are so many kind of heavens that you go to. So constantly he was thinking that, what about me? Suppose suddenly I leave, where will I
go?
I go, because I am not doing any of these meditations. I am not doing any sadhana. Kundalini means people are those who spend so much time doing meditation, raising their level of consciousness and all that. So he was very concerned, and that day Bhagwan came in his dream and said, if you are doing my work and if you are thinking of me, I will take care of everything.
Oh, what an assurance.
Swami said, you don't have to worry. Don't think about all that. If you are thinking of me and if you are busy doing the work assigned to you, I will take care of everything. And that was such a huge relief for him and huge relief for all of us.
Swami says, you know yourself, you will know me. To know myself is a huge effort for me.
Yes.
How am I to know myself? And here he is giving you the clue.
Mm.
Just think of Satya Sai in your heart blissfully.
Yes.
And the other clue is, do my work.
Yes.
Ramakaryam.
Yes.
If you do.
Yes.
He will take care of your spiritual progress and evolution.
Yes.
Because it is not something to be done in isolation, sitting in a room,
exactly,
in meditation, sitting in meditation for long hours.
Yes.
Even mantras also, how many people know actually?
Yes.
They are just happy that they are able to hear the chantings. That itself is helping them so much.
So much.
Well, dear brother, what Swami has given us, I don't think we have even expression in our hearts also to even explain what we are.
Mm.
I'll give you a small example. I used to ask it as a formality before, now I ask it as a fun.
Mm.
I ask people, how are you?
Mm.
Because it's being in the Western country for some time, you develop this habit, whenever you meet somebody, you have to say, how are you?
Mm.
Even though you know you don't care for it, but still you ask. But here I ask in a genuine way, as like an icebreaker, you can say. And, And trust me, the best part is, all the people I have asked who are of Sai fraternity, who are either staying in Puttaparthi or staying anywhere in the world, 99 times I get this answer, when Swami is there, everything is perfect. So I'm like,
really,
this question has become redundant in the, you know, the circle of people who are with Swami, because in our heart of hearts we know he's taking care.
Mm-hmm.
And that faith is so strong with everybody that you ask anybody, how are you? His grace perfect.
Yeah, correct.
It's a boon conferred by him to all of us.
So, you know, when we say that Swami will take care, it is like, you know, in the future tense. But actually speaking, he has been taking care even without our knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe today we have started acknowledging it.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't change the fact that sun was already there. Just I opened my eyes today to acknowledge, okay, there is already there. But he was taking care of me much, much before than I could even imagine. And that is a fact. And when we talk about, you know, penance, I'll give you another example for that. That is why I've been, like, you know, in my studies I can find out. See, to make a child sit and to concentrate, it's a life of a parent goes. A teacher's headache it is to make a child sit down. Bhagawan, in his, I would say today, in his, infinite compassion and mercy, he would come and sit outside. Do nothing. Apparently, do nothing. Mm. He'll just sit. And 20,000 people outside will lose their concentration, lose their aware consciousness. They'll be like stunt looking at him as if mesmerized. We don't even breathe at that time, correct? So imagine, for the focus and concentration where our rishis meditated for hundreds of years to reach that focus point where they can say, now I have arrived.
Mm.
We used to reach every evening without even our effort. We were so much conscious that we lived the rest of the day and night preparing for that moment when we lose ourselves again.
Mm.
Correct?
Yeah.
Even in hostel, even in college, going to work, studies, we were always in that thought. Imagine what he had done by default.
Mm.
So today, if you look at it, all of us, across the world, the greatest boon which he has given us is that we have literally started understanding the divine in every aspect of our life, yeah, without our effort.
Mm-hmm.
I can't even take a percentage of compliment to say, you know, because of my effort, I have learned this. But it has all come.
Mm.
And now only thing we are doing is acknowledging it slowly, slowly. Eureka has happened. After 25 years, I get, oh my God. Now I have understood what my master did to me, you know.
Once Professor Kasturi come to talk to us in the college auditorium on a Thursday talk. He said, the pin drop silence that happens in the auditorium with 25,000 people around. So Swami, he asked Swami, how is it that there is pin drop silence? If a dry leaf falls, I can hear the sound of that during that time when your darshan is there. Then he said, you think your sevadals are controlling this and making them disciplined?
No chance.
There are angels not visible to you who do this work for me, he said.
Wow.
And see how much support is there for us to be silent. The meditation we experience, the bliss we experience while having his darshan, it's a meditation for us without any effort.
Without any effort.
Really, you brought out a wonderful point actually.
Yeah, and one more point.
I would say that's his compassion actually. If you look at it, it's his compassion to come out.
Mm.
Otherwise, he's got no need to come out.
Mm. Yes.
Yes.
He used to every day come out and watch those stupid programs. Sorry to say that, but you know, like anything we show him, he will not mind.
Mm.
Because all that was an excuse for the master to share his love with us.
No.
And we were not aware that what a beauty it was.
Once a devotee commented to me, he's just new to Swami, maybe little. So he said, what is this? We sit for hours together and Baba comes for a few minutes and he's off. He goes off from our sight. Then I used to think, of course, it is not as if we wait for hours. Actually, we wait for very little time and we are very fortunate that we are able to have such a lovely darshan of Swami, even for those few minutes. But there came a time in the later years when Swami sat for hours together and we are not able to sit for a few minutes also. It is an answer to the devotee. If I sit here, you won't be able to sit the way I can, means the long hours.
Yes.
Have you not seen that how many hours as the chanting is going on, Vedam chanting is going on?
I think he has once made us chant around 1.5 to 2 hours of Vedam only.
He stays so steady with all his little difficulties in bodily, but he's seeing all people get up and move out. So unsteady we are. We cannot sit if he decides to stay here. But he built us slowly to come to a stage where we can sit for long hours and enjoy that meditation.
As Brother Abhimanyu said, you know, if you see the last few years of Bhagwan's life, that is what he was like, giving freely. It was wholesale.
Wholesale. Literally wholesale.
Just giving himself away completely and like, take as much as you can. You deserve, don't deserve, whoever you are. As you said, whether the programs are worth it for seeing or not, whether, you know, you are able to sing bhajans well, whether you are able to chant, if the program is up to the mark, not up to the mark, if the program has just been made half an hour ago, just some basic acting, even if the dialogues are not good, it doesn't matter. It's just like, make something so that I can come sit and you just benefit from me.
It was all excuse. Yeah. It was literally all excuse.
Benefit from me. And as you said, you know, you might get tired of sitting, but he's never tired of giving. He's never tired of giving. He's never tired of, because as Bhagwan is saying, that is his joy.
You know,
that is the joy which is Brahmanandam. Where that joy, you don't do anything for yourself. Where that joy is all the time for the others, and you don't feel the difference between you and others.
And see, when you start doing that, then real joy comes.
Real joy comes.
And then everybody accepts it also.
Yes.
I'm just recalling one more incident. If in heaven and January first time, one year we thought of dancing. So our boy said, let us dance for Swami.
Bhangra.
We'll dance for Swami. And I said, buddy, we all are now old people now. In a way, we are all like 30 plus kind of scenario. So, you know, it looked very bad if you mess up. But somehow they were, some boys, some especially the younger crowd of the alumni was very enthusiastic. You know, brother, we should do something for Swami. I had tried to put them in procession, but that got not approved. So they got disappointed a little bit. But then I saw them practice. I said, practice and let us see what comes up. So it so happened that all the dancing boys originally had all grown fat. So 2-3 boys were looking very, very fat. I said, buddy, how can you dance? But they say, no, for Swami, we'll do it, man. It'll be fun. And we are recalling. And then suddenly I realized that everybody has got so much of, you know, zeal and enthusiasm for Swami. So we got an idea. I said, okay, let us do one thing. Bring all the fat boys. All the uneven fellows, and throw in one or two good boys who know dancing, just to monitor them, and let us see how you dance. So when all these fellows came, those who might have not danced for a life now, I'll tell you, they were all like, only goal they had was like how to make Swami smile.
Correct.
If you know, on this day Swami was a little silent, so I said, how do we make him smile? So I said, boss, you all can do it. If you all have the same energy, I'm sure Swami will smile. But see to it that you have to dance only for Swami. And then the condition came for music. So we said, our boys will sing live. So we told the requested music boys to sing bhajans.
Okay.
All the, you know, Bhangra, Dandiya beat bhajans. So that they can sing, so that they can adjust. Our singers can adjust. Because these fat boys could not cope up with that beat also. Because they were so heavy. And they did it. And before they went, I gave them one condition. I said, even if you die, don't stop. You cannot stop the dance in the middle. Otherwise, it will look very bad.
Okay.
So they have to. I said, no, brother, we'll not. For Swami will do it and we'll see that. And you will not believe it. Swami saw them. He, in fact, broke the sequence that year. They were supposed to dance a little later in the program. But Swami could not wait. Swami said, what are these fat boys doing? So I told Swami, dance. He said, hey, Pilistan, call them. So I called, he called himself that fat boy, you know, that Bharat Sethuraman, he called him. He lovely talked to him and he said, okay, what are you doing? He said, Swami, dance. Then Swami looked at him like that as if, no, you will dance kind of expression was there. And then the poor fellow, he just nodded his head and Swami said, sit down. After a few minutes, Swami said, okay, stop the program. He said, come and do. So he immediately called them and those boys danced. I'll tell you, it was the worst dance ever. But it became the best dance.
For Swami.
It was for Swami. And Swami laughed at the end of the program. He was literally laughing. He said, I point that.
All the pakodas dancing.
All the pakodas dancing. And they were panting when they came to Swami afterwards. Swami took pictures with them. He was so happy. Actually, that's how all life is. You know, if you really do it with that intention,
yes.
I think everybody loves it. And then it becomes pure.
Mm.
And nothing is imperfect. You know, if we have a definition that he's not a good dancer, he's a good dancer. All that is immaterial afterwards.
Yes.
You can be the excellent dancer, but if he turns his head away, you're done.
See, just as he said now, that don't waste even half a minute.
Yes.
Come on, realize yourself and by hearing my glory.
Yes.
And again, he himself says here towards the end of this chapter, I too have no time to spare. I have to see off many who are returning to their places. Mm. See how busy he was giving himself.
Mm.
That's what Brother Bishu was talking.
But I remember once, like, Swami used to give us so much. But once he gave us a glimpse of what he actually expects from us. And I remember, he will be very familiar, there will be a very old devotee of Swami. Whenever he comes, he'll get joy because he'll get those big watermelons. If you remember.
Yes.
Whenever he comes, my God, he'll get watermelons or he'll get berries or he'll get mangoes. Like, his coming is like a celebration for the students. Because I remember carrying big watermelons going back to hostel or two mangoes going back to hostel. It was very special.
I think Himachal says.
No. Yeah. He was a
Andhra.
Very... Andhra Anjaneyalu, yeah. Sir, where Swami had sung, yeah. His grandson or something.
Mm.
So, We were very fond of that person. Very old man, very, very humble.
Very happy when you see him.
Oh my God. He immediately said, come on, all of you come on. No one should miss Darshan today because we are going to get... And Swami will send us, I remember, after Darshan, Swami will say, go back to Poonchandra Auditorium and pick up. I remember once going, there will be heaps of watermelons kept. You can pick up yours, whatever, big one, small one, very big one, and you get it. So once I remember, after all this, once I think Swami thought, let me show you a glimpse of what actually a devotee is.
Mm.
So once I remember, I was sitting in bhajan hall, and this is morning. And then his grandson used to study in our school, 8th class or something. So Swami once, after morning interview, Swami came out, and then he looked at us, we were all sitting in bhajan hall. He wanted to show us something. He told, do you want to know who a devotee is? Oh, it's like... It's a big revelation. Bhakturante evada cheptanu, something like Swami told. We were like, wow, something very special is coming. So Swami asks to call that this old man who gets these watermelons. So his grandson gets him and he makes him stand just in front of the bhajan hall door. We're all looking at him, all glued, our bhajan boys, few of us who are there. And says, then Swami asks him, what is your role? What are you? Then he says, Swami, I'm just a puppet. Neloka chinna keel bommani Swami. Whenever you will, till that time I will dance. Once you say no, I'll stop. It's all you. Swami's face, it was, my God, I was able to see the joy and that satisfaction in his face. And he says, see, chudra, adi bhakti ante. Like it was a revelation. Because we have admired this old man for a long time. Because of his watermelons or mangoes or berries. Now Swami gave us a taste of the actual fruit of devotion, what he had. Swami told, I'm just a puppet. Till you say yes, I'll dance. Once you say no, I'll withdraw. Like, I felt this is like the ultimate, the acme of surrender or sharanagati, what you call. So mighty, because of that, all of us to enjoy those fruits which he used to give us.
Swami had so many devotees like this, whose glory we ourselves do not know actually, and they never come out. Wonderful surrendered devotees.
Yes.
Absolutely, and I think there are so many such souls in Prashant Nilayam.
Yes.
I feel we don't have to read the stories of Meera, Prahlada or Dhruva, because if you just look around, there are enough and more such examples. Take the life of Ratanlal Amma, take the life of Raman Rao sir, take the life of Rama Brahmam sir, take the life of
Kutum
Ramon, Kutum Rao, Ramon.
Even the devotees who live in the sheds.
Sheds, yes.
Which, yeah.
Very, very...
These ladies, they are very rich garland.
They are not poor people or anything. They are people who have given their everything all their properties and wealth to in Swami's name.
Yes.
And just want to live in his shelter.
Yes. And they have given up their mansions, they're living in the sheds.
Yes, yes.
And for years.
Yes.
Together, yes. I think
you know, there's we have Balbir Amma here who used to manage the ladies.
Mataji, yes. Mataji.
She was a queen mother.
Yes,
yes. Zindrani.
She was a queen mother.
Yes,
a real queen mother.
So I think if you look at their lives, ultimately you will see in their lives that all the Navavidha Vidha.
All the paths
of devotion, that Shravanam, Mananam, Kirtanam, everything was there. Finally, Sakhyam was there and Atma Nivedanam. I mean, that whole...
No, just that one love for Swami.
That's all.
Took care of all everything. These aspects of your sadhana.
Else, everything else. They were the one, you know, as Swami says, witness the fulfilling story of Satya Sai and thus attain the supreme wisdom. They really enjoyed that.
Right.
They really... were tuned in. Swami says, now stop listening to useless tales. They stopped their useless stuff of their life.
And listen to this Burra Katha.
Yes. So that they can fulfill their lives with the story and the saga of Satya Sai. And I think that is the way for us, for all of us. And we don't have to work for supreme wisdom. It will automatically happen whenever it has to happen, however it has to happen.
Even as you are living, you experience that.
We experience that.
It's not something that you will do after life.
Yes. Absolutely.
See, I think the way Bhagwan has made spirituality, so-called spirituality, as simple and enlightening for us in that manner.
Everyday living.
That is a mind-boggling experience. The more I think about it, more I say it, it is sometimes difficult to even comprehend that really, do we really understand all of this? Because when you talk to the contemporary outside, you realize that people are so much trapped with their lifestyle that they don't have a time to pause and spend 5 minutes with themselves. Here we are somehow still finding time to relax, you know, contemplate, talk about things.
Yes.
How do we get it?
Yes.
The chase is over.
Yes.
We are running, we are busy, that's what he keeps you.
Mm-hmm.
But we are not chasing anything.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that he has pulled out that aspect of, you know, aspiration from that angle,
mm-hmm.
that we have no aspiration for an activity.
Mm-hmm.
We have aspiration for life.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't work for an individual aspirations. Mm-hmm. Like you don't go to work with an aspiration to get a better salary or better hike.
Yeah. Yes.
Mm-hmm. You don't go to Mandir to sing for a better acknowledgement.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
All that small, like landmarks, he has pulled it out of us.
Yes.
Yes.
He has made you live only for a finale.
Mm-hmm.
And rest of the things are just happening.
Just happening.
So you don't mind whether you want to go to work or you sing a song or you sweep a floor. It doesn't matter.
Even to do service, everything is served on a platter for you to serve.
Yes, absolutely. That's wonderful. As someone said, you know, when you're running your life, it is race. And when you're running your life with God, it's grace. So that is how it is.
Actually, we all are in grace only.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Let me tell you last thing, you know, just on grace. One day, Swami asked, what do you want? I said, Swami, your grace.
Mm.
And I literally meant it not because I understood what grace means, because I thought there is nothing worth asking. Mm. So I wanted to just... From my side, I thought I'm just being polite and saying, Swami, your grace.
Mm-hmm.
And I can confess it today. It may sound foolish about myself, but Swami immediately looked at me and said, hey, don't waste your prayer. Grace is already in abundance.
Already there.
Ask something else.
Gandiga undi, he will tell in Telugu.
Always you would say that.
So I said, man, if we have got not even to ask for grace, what the hell we are asking, you know? So we just enjoy. There is literally nothing left for us to aspire for.
Yes.
Everything has been given to us. Whatever you think of it, it'll come to you.
You just have to utilize it.
now it's a matter of, you know, like our whole vagaries of our own thoughts.
Yes.
But he still gives you time to think about it.
Yes.
We can't help it. Mm-hmm. We are so trapped.
Yes. But I think, as you said, we have to move from not just using that 3-4%
to 85%. Not 80%.
To 10-15%.
Yes. Yes. To more.
Yeah.
So that DNA becomes absolutely divine connect for us.
And Swami himself
correct.
Said that yeah. he himself is not using even 1% of his divinity.
Yeah. Yeah. Swami himself used to say
yes.
that. Yeah.
Wow. So if he uses little more and to display to us, imagine what it will be.
He'll run away.
What we have seen is endlessly we are talking about. That is only 1%, not even 1%, he said.
We can't withstand that whole splendor of the divinity. I think that's why I felt Swami, he just, you know, gave glimpses of it, and that itself was like too much for
too
us.
Much.
Yeah. If he was that all-knowing self every day doing darshan, no, nobody will be sitting there actually for darshan.
No, we can't even stand him. You're right. We cannot have darshan.
We cannot have
because
we need purity for that.
Yes,
yeah,
we don't have that.
Imagine if you knew, I know your thoughts.
Yes.
Can you face me?
You won't sit there.
Imagine if I was aware that he knows my all.
Yeah. In fact, we used to say that, you know, thank God. We feel God does not know everything. If he really knows and he exposes us, then we can't survive here.
We can't sit in the front.
Yes.
Well,
and especially the boys who have seen Swami in different.
Yeah, there are so many ways
yes.
in your little ways you understand him.
Yes. So that is his mercy. Beautiful. So dear listeners, well, if the clock was not ticking, we could have just gone on and on. And that is how it is whenever you talk about Bhagwan. It starts with some concept, but after that it moves to just his glory and his story. And that is what is always so beautiful. So please feel free to open Sandhya Nivarini. And as you read through this poem, as you read through these chapters, if you have any queries, if you have anything that you want to share with us, please feel free. As always, you can write to listener@radioside.org. I remember the last time when we concluded, we said we will discuss about a question that Brother K.M. Ganesh raised. Why is it that we make our lives complicated? Is it because we feel that if we don't make it that way, we will be out of tune with times? We didn't address that today, but I think next time, Brother K.M. Ganesh will be there with us and we will definitely discuss that question too. If you have any thoughts on this, please feel free to give your insights and impressions. As always, we'll pray to Swami and see how he guides our thoughts. Thank you so much for being with us. You can also send your feedback to our WhatsApp number 9393-258-258. Offering to Bhagwan this session of immersing ourselves in his glory and his story, we bring the session to a close. Thank you so much. Sai Ram.
Sai Ram.
Sai Ram. Sai Ram.